Today is Read Across America Day, an effort by the National Education Association to promote reading and literacy for kids. And it's set to coincide with the birthday of an author with that same mission, Theodore Geisel, better known as Dr. Seuss.
And there's been some breaking Seuss news lately. There is a new Dr. Seuss book on the way. Last month, publishers announced that the late author's previously unreleased book, What Pet Should I Get?, will be published this summer. Draws on writings and drawings found in a box by his wife.
Philip Nell joins us now. He's a professor of English at Kansas State University. His books on children's literature include Dr. Seuss, American Icon. Phil, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, Phil, the book isn't out yet, but what do we know so far about What Pet Should I Get?
Well, we know that the working title was Pet Store and that it's one of the manuscripts that was found when Audrey Geisel, his widow, donated some material to Special Collections at the University of California at San Diego a couple of years ago. And when they did that, there was actually a news story, and they printed photographs of some of the stuff that was in there. And there is actually a page from the pet store in the photograph of that. So we do know a little bit of text from it. I can read it to you if you want.
Sure.
Yeah.
Then I looked at Kay. I said, "What will we do? I like all the pets that I see. So do you. But we cannot take all the pets that we find. We have to pick one. Can you make up your mind? Then, what do you know? Then we saw something new, a pup and a kitten. Boy, they were good, too. The cat or the dog or this kitten? The pup. Oh, boy, it is something to make your mind up."
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. Well, I don't want to rain on our Seuss parade, but is there any concern that this unpublished material shouldn't be published, at least not as a freestanding book, if Dr. Seuss didn't see this as a finished work?
Well, I haven't seen the finished work myself, so it's hard for me to know. It is useful to know, perhaps, that Seuss wrote far more than he published, and that was one of the reasons that some of the stuff that he published came out under the name Theo Lessig, Lessig being Geisel backwards. So it's possible this could have been a Lessig book that never got published. It's also possible that this could be an earlier version of One Fish, Two Fish, Red Fish, Blue Fish. The boy and the girl, who are the main characters in this book, are the same kids who are in One Fish, Two Fish, Red Fish, Blue Fish. So possibly we're seeing an earlier version of that. I don't know. I mean, the bottom line is it's Seuss. So even if it's not the greatest Seuss, it's still going to be interesting. You know?
Well, you're a Seuss scholar. As someone who studies Dr. Seuss, how exciting is this for you to come across this new work that's going to be published? You haven't seen the whole thing, but what is it like for you?
Oh, it's always fun to see how Seuss's mind worked. And I've looked at drafts of other Seuss books, and it's fascinating to see his process. For those people who are writers, you already know this, but rewriting until he got just the swing and the rhythm of the verse that he wanted and the art that he wanted. So it's always great to have a glimpse of a creative genius at work. So it'll be fun.
It feels so fun and spontaneous, which I guess is a sure sign that a lot of work went into it behind the scenes.
Well, yeah. I mean, the draft page that I've seen the photograph of, you can see that he's revised the verse several times. There's little pieces of paper that are taped to the artwork, and you can see that there's paper taped on top of paper on top of paper. So there's clearly earlier versions of the verse behind there. And of the manuscripts that I've looked at, that was typical. You know, he would write it out, and then he would change it and paste something over that, and then he would change that and paste something over that. So, you know, Seuss once said that to establish or to write a 60-page book, he may write over 1,000 pages before he was satisfied. And I don't think that's wrong. It may be a slight exaggeration in terms of the number of pages, but in terms of the amount of effort, yeah, that's about right.
We live in a world right now with a lot of children's books, a lot of children's books authors. What would you say makes Dr. Seuss unique? Even today, huh?
Well, I think Seuss has established himself in the canon of great American children's writers because he taught generations of children not only how to read, but how to think. So with the beginner book series, starting with The Cat in the Hat, he was writing books that were designed to teach children to read and books that were more interesting than, say, the Dick and Jane books. But then he also wrote books like The Sneetches or Horton Hears a Who or The Butter Battle Book or The Lorax, which are about critical thinking, you know, about taking care of the environment or being opposed to discrimination. And I think the range of his creative ambitions there is part of what's made him so popular, and also that he delivers all this, whether it's a message like the Lorax, or whether it's something more purely fun, like Green Eggs and Ham, in verse. And the rhythm of that verse, I think, keeps us reading, and it's you can almost sing the Dr. Seuss book. It's musical, and I think that's part of what his appeal is, too.
Looking back from now, it seems like a no-brainer that this would have been successful, but how did the world of publishing and children's publishing react to Dr. Seuss? Did they embrace this right off the bat?
I mean, Seuss loved to tell the story of how hard it was to publish his first children's book, and to think that I saw it on Mulberry Street, which came out in 1937, that everybody turned it down and no one wanted to publish it because it was something that they hadn't seen before. And it's true. I mean, he had written several books before he got a children's book published in 1937. So initially, the reviews were okay when the books were published, but he did have a little bit of a hard time breaking in. And he didn't really make his living at writing children's books until 20 years after. And to think that I saw it on Mulberry Street, it wasn't until The Cat in the Hat in 1957 that writing children's books became his full-time occupation. Up until that point, his main job was advertisements. He was an ad man. That was how he made his money. So, yeah, I mean, I would say that although the reviews were positive and the sales were fine, he wasn't really devoted to the children's book gig for about 20 years, because that's what it took him to really become established.
How did he change that children's book world once he really was out there making his mark?
Well, I mean, I think he changed it in a number of ways, one of which is, making it okay to take children seriously, and he's certainly not the first person to do that, but, you know, his popularity allowed him to use his position as a children's writer to raise serious questions that, you know, some people thought weren't really appropriate for children. The Lorax, when it was published, was seen by some as kind of a heavy-handed, hard-sell, ecological fable. And it is that, but it's also a really serious and really important issue that is, in fact, more important now, I think, than it was in 1971 when the book was published. So I think, yeah, I mean, I think he used his position as an advocate for things that he believed in, and I think that's one of the ways that he changed it. And verse, I think, would be the other thing. When you see people today who maybe are celebrities and want to write a children's book, often they try to do it in verse, and it's usually not very good. It's usually bad imitation Seuss verse, but I think he's also pushed verse towards the center of what it means to write a children's book.
In the world of children's literature, who is there anyone you'd point to as really taking up the mantle of Dr. Seuss and maybe running with it in their own direction?
Oh, I think Mo Willems is probably the obvious choice.
Oh, one of my favorites.
Don't Let the Pigeon Drive the Bus, and Elephant and Piggy, and the Knuffle Bunny books. But there are many others who share Seuss's subversive, playful spirit, from Lane Smith to Laurie Keller. Those are some others that come to mind. Lane Smith is probably best known for illustrating The Stinky Cheese Man and other Fairly Stupid Tales. And Laurie Keller is probably best known for The Scrambled States of America, but she's done a lot of other funny books. So I think anybody who kind of embraces that mischievous, playful spirit of Seuss and isn't afraid to push boundaries a bit.
Do you think today's readers are going to eat this up? Is this book going to be a hit?
Oh, I'm sure it will be. I mean, it's Seuss, so, you know, it's like a new Harry Potter book. You know, people don't even need to know what's between the covers. It's got Harry Potter's name on it. They'll buy it, and that's not a slight on Rowling. I enjoy the Harry Potter book. I just mean, you know, do you think people will buy more chocolate? Yes, they do. You know, so I think that's what we're dealing with. And you know, the collections of magazine stories that were published, I think, have done pretty well. There's been two of those in the last few years, and so it looks like we're in for more unpublished Seuss, and I'm okay with that.
Phil, thanks a lot for being with us today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
That's Philip Nell, professor of English at Kansas State University. We've been talking about Dr. Seuss. His books on children's literature include Dr. Seuss, American Icon.